a very great.
This is VOA News. I'm Joe Ramsey. Russian forces bombarded scores of towns in Ukraine on Christmas Day as Russian President Vladimir Putin said he was open to negotiations, a stance Washington has dismissed as posturing because of continued Russian attacks. An advisor to Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky said Putin needed to return to reality and acknowledge it was Russia that did not want talks. Putin said his country was ready to, quote, negotiate some acceptable outcomes with Ukraine. He made the remarks in a state television interview, excerpts which were broadcast on Sunday. He said that, quote, it's not us who refuse talks, it's them. Putin also said that Moscow has no other choice and said he believes the Kremlin was, quote, acting in the right direction. Quote, we're defending our national interests, the interests of our citizens, our people, he said. Several non-governmental organizations say they will stop working in Afghanistan because of the Taliban's move to ban female staff. Neil Turner is Norwegian Refugee Council's country director in Afghanistan.
We have complied with all cultural norms, and we simply can't work without our dedicated female staff, who are essential for us to be able to access women who are in desperate need of assistance.
He says the timing of the announcement is particularly troubling to the people of Afghanistan.
This comes at the worst possible time, when the economy of Afghanistan is collapsing and we need women as part of the workforce to enable the economy to recover.
The Taliban ordered all NGOs to immediately stop female staff from coming to work, quote, until further notice. This is VOA News. Taiwan's defense ministry said on Monday China's military sent 71 planes and 7 ships toward Taiwan in a 24-hour display of force directed at the island. The activity came after China expressed anger at Taiwan-related provisions in a U.S. annual defense spending bill passed on Saturday. China's military harassment of self-ruled Taiwan, which claims as its own territory, has intensified in recent years, and the Communist Party's People's Liberation Army has sent planes or ships towards the island on a near daily basis. A deadly blizzard pummeled the city of Buffalo in western New York State on Christmas Day, trapping people in their cars, causing power outages, and raising the death toll to at least 34 from a severe winter storm system that has swept the United States. Reuters correspondent Zachary Goldman reports.
We are in a war. This is a war with Mother Nature.
Governor Kathy Hochul on Sunday called the blizzard that hit her hometown, quote, historic.
And this will go down in history as the most devastating storm in Buffalo's long storied history of having battled many battles.
A powerful winter storm that caused frigid temperatures from the northern Great Plains to the U.S.-Mexico border was moving east on Sunday after knocking out power to millions late last week and causing flight cancellations during the busy holiday travel period.
Immigrant aid groups said on Sunday busloads of migrants were dropped over Christmas weekend near U.S. Vice President Kamala Harris's residence in Washington amid freezing temperatures, having traveled from the southwest border in Texas. Approximately about 110 to 130 of the migrants seeking asylum in the United States, many of them families with children, were placed on buses by Texas officials, according to a relief agency working with the city of Washington, D.C. Texas has bused thousands of migrants to Washington, New York City, and Chicago in what some critics have labeled a stunt amid a national debate over the high levels of immigrant arrivals along the U.S. southern border. Designated Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has issued a rare rebuke of his presumed coalition allies for saying they would advance laws allowing discrimination against LGBTQ people, pledging there would be no harm to their rights by his new government. Netanyahu said the remarks, quote, are unacceptable to me and to members of Likud, and that the coalition agreement, quote, does not allow discrimination against LGBTQ or harming their right to receive services like all other Israeli citizens. Follow us on the VOA mobile app. I'm Joe Ramsey, VOA News.
Today is Monday, December 26th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I am Chino Adolfo in Washington. Coming up in the next half hour, Russian president claims Moscow is ready for talks with Ukraine as fears grow of attacks from Moldova.
In 1992, Russian-backed separatists started a civil war in Transnistria and still control the region, even though it is internationally recognized as part of Moldova.
World Health Organization expresses optimism that this year's health emergencies would come to an end.
He noted a global outbreak of monkeypox, now known as mpox, an Ebola outbreak in Uganda, and cholera outbreaks in multiple countries as other health crises.
And millions hunkered down in deep freeze as storms kill at least 27 people across the United States. We'll have these stories and more next on International Edition. Stay tuned. Russian President Vladimir Putin claims that Moscow is ready for talks to end the war in Ukraine. Putin said in remarks on state television interview that were released on Sunday that Moscow is, quote, prepared to negotiate some acceptable outcomes with all the participants of this process, unquote. Putin's remarks come as attacks on Ukraine continue. A countrywide air raid alert was announced twice on Sunday, and three missiles in the afternoon hit the city of Kramatorsk in the partially occupied Donetsk region. As Christians mark Christmas, Pope Francis called for an end to the war in Ukraine and other conflicts in his message on Sunday, saying the world was suffering from, quote, famine of peace, unquote. Ukraine conflict, he said, should not diminish concerns for those people whose lives have been devastated by other conflicts or humanitarian crises, naming among others Syria, Myanmar, Iran, Haiti, and the Sahel region of Africa. Moldovan intelligence officials say Russian forces could launch a military offensive early next year in southern Ukraine. One goal, they say, might be to link Russian forces to Ukraine to a Russian-backed separatist region in Moldova called Transnistria. Anna Kotuschenko visited the region and reports.
Nina was born and raised here, in the Ukrainian village of Velika Mikhailovka in Odessa Oblast, which borders Transnistria, a Russian-backed separatist region of Moldova. For most of her life, she worked at a local factory. Today, she owns a small bread stand. Nina isn't worried about a Moldovan intelligence report warning that Russia might launch a new offensive in southern Ukraine.
It's just talk. We're fine here. Everything is calm. Our guys are protecting us.
But not all locals are unconcerned as Nina. Moldova declared its independence from the Soviet Union in 1991. In 1992, Russian-backed separatists started a civil war in Transnistria and still control the region, even though it is internationally recognized as part of Moldova. There are Russian troops in the region to this day, and that's what worries many Ukrainians living near the border. Kovalchuk says since the start of the war in Ukraine, large numbers of men have crossed the Ukrainian-Moldovan border near Tiraspol, Transnistria's capital.
We have unofficial information that in the last 6 months, a lot of young and middle-aged men have come to Transnistria. They said they were visiting relatives or had business to do, yet none of them left. We assume these are Russian officers and they are waiting for something. According to our sources, it's about 1,000 men as of now.
Moldovan intelligence officials heightened concerns this week when they said there could be a Russian offensive in southern Ukraine early next year, with the goal of linking Ukraine and Transnistria. Kovalchuk believes it's unlikely.
Even if there's a conflict, Ukraine will win. We have more men there. We have an advantage.
Meanwhile, residents of Velika Mikhailovka are preparing for winter. Volunteers have set up heating point for locals because Russian rocket attacks have been knocking out electricity and heating across the country.
We realize this winter will be tough. Our state is all we have, and we'll fight for it until the end. We are owners of our land.
The village continues to live its life, but cautiously, keeping an eye on the western border. For Anna Kostuchenko in the Odessa region, Ukraine, Anna Rice, VOA News.
A conference to bolster Iran's stability and security held in neighboring Jordan this week came amidst a recent uptick in violence in the country. Analysts say Iraq's new prime minister, who aligned more closely with Iran than his predecessor, showed he must continue to strengthen ties with the Arab world. Dale Gavlak reports from Amman, Jordan.
The meeting on the Dead Sea included high-level officials from regional rivals Saudi Arabia and Iran, along with leaders from Iraq, France, Turkey, Egypt, Kuwait, Bahrain, Oman, and the European Union. The aim, they said, was to show support for Iraq, its sovereignty, security, and stability, as well as its political process, its economic and development progress, and its efforts to rebuild. It was the second such meeting of the Baghdad Conference for Cooperation and Partnership. Jordan's King Abdullah II underscored that the region is facing security and political crises, along with threats to food, water, health, and energy security, and the impacts of climate change. Iraq's new Prime Minister, Mohammed Shia al-Sudani, told the gathering that the Iraqi government has adopted an open approach to building regional and international partnerships based on joint interests. He said Iraq's priority now is to strengthen cooperation with its partners through interdependence in infrastructure, economic integration, and mutual investments that strengthen the bonds of brotherhood and friendship between our nations and peoples. Regarding international security, he did indirectly refer to Turkey and Iran for their building of dams that have created a growing water crisis in Iraq and their recent military attacks with missiles and drones on the Kurdish areas in the north. Hamza Haddad, an Iraqi visiting scholar at the European Council on Foreign Relations, told VOA that was important because this was a conference on Iraq's security and stability.
I said I would hope the prime minister speaks about water flow issues from Turkey and Iran and attacks on Iraqi sovereignty by Turkey and Iran. And he did mention those two things. He didn't mention them by names, but he obviously knows who he's talking about. The next question is, will that lead to something? That was a step further from the last conference. He did mention some uncomfortable things with those in the room, and hopefully we can see some action on them.
Meanwhile, Riyad Khawaji, an analyst who directs the Institute for Near East and Gulf Military Analysis in Dubai, said it is important to gauge the disposition of Tehran, which plays a central role in the crises of the region, from Iraq to Syria through to Lebanon and Yemen, to compromise. Ahmed Abu Ghait, the Arab League chief, urged the gathering to leave Iraq out of regional rivalries, saying that Iraq should not be an arena for conflict or setting scores. Dale Gaflek for VOA News. I'm on Jordan.
In a review of global health in 2022, the head of the World Health Organization this week expressed optimism that many of this year's health emergencies would come to an end during the new year. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
WHO Director General Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus gave a grim assessment of the many health challenges and threats people around the world have faced this year. Topping the list was the COVID-19 pandemic, which has sickened and killed millions of people for a third year. He noted a global outbreak of monkeypox, now known as Mpox, an Ebola outbreak in Uganda, and cholera outbreaks in multiple countries as other health crises. He said these emergencies were compounded by wars in Ethiopia and Ukraine, as well as climate disasters, including drought and flooding in the Greater Horn of Africa and the Sahel, and flooding in Pakistan. And yet, as 2022 draws to a close, he said there were many reasons for hope.
The COVID-19 pandemic has declined significantly this year. The global monkeypox outbreak is waning, and there have been no cases of Ebola in Uganda for more than 3 weeks. We're hopeful that each of these emergencies will be declared over at different points next year.
While the pandemic is not over, Tedros said, great progress has been made in containing its spread. He noted 1 year ago, COVID-19 was killing 50,000 people a week. This now has dropped to fewer than 10,000 deaths a week. Despite this significant decline, he cautioned, the virus is here to stay, and people have to learn how to manage the disease. He urged vigilance, masking, social distancing, and above all else, vaccinating. Looking ahead to next year, he said WHO's focus will be on health promotion and disease prevention.
Instead of focusing on sick care like we do, we focus on health care, meaning keeping people healthy. And we will do everything to make that happen. But for that to happen, we will also focus on pushing for universal health coverage, especially with a shift to primary health care as a foundation.
The WHO chief cited emergency preparedness and response as another priority. With new virus strains emerging, he emphasized the importance of doing everything possible to prepare the world for future pandemics. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
The streets of Bethlehem were crowded for Christmas again after 2 years of COVID-related restrictions. In the Church of the Nativity, the faithful celebrated Jesus' birth as the number of Palestinian Christians continued to dwindle. Linda Granstein reports for VOA from Jerusalem.
Christian tourists from around the world have come to Bethlehem to celebrate the birth of Jesus. While the numbers have not quite reached pre-pandemic levels, hotels and restaurants are almost full, bringing an economic boost to the West Bank. Thousands filled the Church of the Nativity on the site where Christians believe Jesus was born for the traditional midnight mass, which was broadcast around the world. Palestinian officials, including President Mahmoud Abbas, attended the service in Bethlehem. Latin patriarch Pier Battista Pizzaballa said that the world is no longer focusing on the Palestinians who are still waiting for their right to live in dignity and freedom. He said that Palestinians are living through difficult challenges, but the message of Christmas is a message of peace. Christmas comes as the Palestinian Christian population in the West Bank has dwindled to less than 1% of the total population. Hani Al-Hayek is the mayor of Beit Sahur, one of the few places in the West Bank that still has a Christian majority. He says he worries the Christian presence could decline even further.
We are facing big immigration from here to Europe, to United States, especially to United States. We have big immigration from Beit Sahur, Bethlehem, Beit Jala. And this is not good for us. We are encourage people to stay here, to keep in their land, in their homes, but they need safety. They need security for their children.
He was referring to the ongoing clashes between Israelis and Palestinians, in which 150 Palestinians have been killed this year, according to the Palestinian Health Ministry. That makes it the deadliest year for Palestinians in 16 years. 20 Israelis have also been killed in the violence. Israeli officials say most of the Palestinians killed were gunmen who attacked Israeli soldiers when they tried to make arrests. Palestinians said some of those killed were not involved in any clashes. Linda Gradstein for VOA News, Jerusalem.
In other news, millions of people are hunkering down in deep freeze overnight and early morning to ride out the frigid storm that has killed at least 27 people across the United States. The Arctic blast has trapped some residents inside homes with heaping snow drifts and knocked out power to scores of homes and businesses. The scope of the storm has been nearly unprecedented, stretching from the Great Lakes near Canada to the Rio Grande along the border with Mexico. The National Weather Service says about 60% of the U.S. population has faced some sort of winter weather advisory or warning, and temperatures plummeted drastically below normal from east of the Rocky Mountains to the Appalachians. This is VOA's International Edition. I am Chinedu Afo in Washington. Virtual reality and immersive technology embraced by gamers has moved into medicine, where it is used for stress relief, physical therapy, pain management, and other applications. Mike O'Sullivan has more.
A special headset, virtual medicine immerses patients in three-dimensional images, soothing sights and sounds to help them feel better and become healthier. It has many therapeutic applications, says the physician and researcher who runs the virtual medical program at Cedars-Sinai Medical Center in Los Angeles, Dr. Brennan Spiegel.
It's being used for physical therapy. It's being used for eating disorders, for high blood pressure management, for schizophrenia, depression, anxiety, irritable bowel syndrome. The list goes on and on.
Helping accident victims, people recovering from surgery, cancer patients, and even women in labor. And to train doctors and nurses. The U.S. Food and Drug Administration calls the field medical extended reality and is working to expand patient access and measure the effectiveness of the technology. This patient says it helps him manage chronic pain he has suffered since undergoing cancer treatment decades ago. Virtual medicine patient Tom Norris.
It's like being in a movie theater, blackened movie theater, with no one around you, where all you can see is the screen. And it just pulls you right in.
The program takes him virtually to new places.
Whether it's scenes of cows grazing in a field in the Swiss mountains, or, you know, swimming with the dolphins, or swimming with a big blue whale.
The system provides feedback to help users calm the mind and retrain the brain, says a psychiatrist who develops the programs that work through sophisticated headsets. Dr. Omer Liron of Cedars-Sinai Medical Center.
So this headset has embedded biosensors in it for collecting heart rate variability, your pupillometry, which is your pupil size, also eye tracking.
Letting the patient fly over a waterfall, for example, controlling the imagery with the mind as the body responds to the calming experience. Chronic pain, like Tom Norris's, is located in the brain as much as the body, says physician Spiegel.
What can happen is the tissue itself may even heal almost completely, if not completely, but there's still a sense of pain. And it's almost like the pain has moved from the periphery all the way up into the brain, where the brain itself starts to generate pain.
In 8 to 12 weeks of training, that process can be reversed. Through virtual medicine, an emerging specialty, doctors say is helping patients with various health conditions. Mike O'Sullivan, VOA News, Los Angeles.
One of the world's largest marine citizen science projects has surveyed its 500th section of Australia's Great Barrier Reef since the effort began in 2020. This year's Great Reef Census, which runs from September to December, has revealed severe damage to the coral, while other parts of the 2,300-kilometer World Heritage Site are thriving. The Great Barrier Reef is made of about 3,000 individual reefs, making it the world's largest coral system. Phil Mercer reports from Sydney.
The annual reconnaissance of the Great Barrier Reef off northeastern Australia has produced tens of thousands of images. They've been taken by divers and snorkelers, on board more than 60 dive boats, tourism vessels, sailing boats, super yachts and tugboats, who are surveying the far reaches of the world's largest coral system. They visited 500 individual reefs during the past 3 years. The photographs paint a picture of the health of the world's largest coral system, providing data on the types of coral and their coverage at each reef. Andy Ridley is the Chief Executive Officer of Citizens of the Great Barrier Reef that organises the survey.
Reaching 500 reefs through the Great Reef Census is a massive achievement for the community. It just goes to prove how a motley flotilla of all sorts of vessels can reach such an enormous amount of area, bearing in mind that Great Barrier Reef is the same size as Germany. We've reached about 15% of the reefs, which is amazing.
Early results from the survey have shown some parts of the Great Barrier Reef are flourishing. Others, though, have been damaged by warmer ocean temperatures and more intense tropical storms caused by climate change, as well as coral-eating crown-of-thorn starfish. There are other threats too, including overfishing, pollution, and the industrialisation of the Queensland coast. Starting in March, citizen scientists from across the world will be able to join the project by helping to analyse the images from the expeditions. The Great Reef Census is a partnership with the University of Queensland, the Great Barrier Reef Marine Park Authority, which administers the region, James Cook University, the Australian Institute of Marine Science, and several technology companies. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
This is Science in a Minute.
According to the website VolcanoDiscovery.com, the Big Island of Hawaii has experienced slightly over 8,400 earthquakes so far in 2022. Most, however, were classified as fairly minor M2+ quakes. Geoscientists at Caltech say they found that magma surging through extensive interconnected webs of tunnels beneath the island's volcanoes caused a series of mini earthquakes over the last 7 years. The scientists explain that these networks of passageways are used to recharge the magma chambers of at least Mauna Loa and Kilauea, which are two of the island's most active volcanoes. To reach their findings, the scientists ran data gathered by seismic stations on the Big Island through a machine learning algorithm. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
Hello, Africa. I'm James Butte, host of VOA's Daybreak Africa. When news breaks, VOA Africa is there, bringing you the news as it happens. Listen to Daybreak Africa Monday through Friday at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC. And our 5 minute newscast come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
This has been International Edition on the Voice of America. On behalf of the entire production team, thank you so much for listening. Visit our website for in-depth coverage of world events and news 24 hours at voanews.com and check out voaafrica.com for more English language programming. You can find International Edition and our current affairs programs, Encounter, Press Conference USA and Issues in the News on voanews.com. Until next time, I'm Chinedu Afo in Washington, wishing you a Merry Christmas and Happy Holidays.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Once Russia's war of aggression against Ukraine is over, Ukraine will need to rebuild. But no reconstruction can succeed there until Ukraine rids itself of the thousands of landmines and unexploded ordnance sown over some 160,000 square kilometers, or one quarter of Ukrainian territory, by Russia's invading forces. Over the course of the year, Ukraine, until recently the region's breadbasket and one of the world's premier exporters of grain and sunflowers, saw its agricultural output plummet as Russia prodigiously mined its once fertile fields and agricultural installations. Similarly, explosives were also deliberately staged to kill and maim civilians. In the words of Michael Teary, program manager from the Office of Weapons Removal and Abatement at the State Department's Bureau of Political Military Affairs,
"We know that Russia's forces have deliberately booby-trapped objects in people's homes, including children's toys, and even the bodies of people killed by the invasion. The horrific use of improvised explosive devices by Russia's forces is reminiscent of ISIS tactics in Iraq and Syria, where ISIS terrorists sought to inflict as many civilian casualties as possible and make people afraid to return home."
It is therefore no surprise that demining is one of the Ukrainian government's top priorities. The vast majority of this dangerous work is already being done by the operatives of a number of Ukraine's state services. The United States has been supporting Ukraine's demining effort since 2016 by advising Ukrainian authorities, training and equipping government demining teams, and also funding international non-governmental organizations to demine along the line of contact in Luhansk and Donetsk oblasts. Most recently, the U.S. Department of State has allocated $91.5 million to Ukraine for further demining efforts. As incredible as the government of Ukraine's efforts have already been, the sheer magnitude of explosive hazard contamination is overwhelming, said Mr. Teary.
"The $91.5 million in assistance that we're providing over the coming year is designed to strengthen and supplement Ukraine's national capacity in the recognition that this effort has been and always will be led by Ukraine."
The cleanup of Russia's mines and unexploded ordnance will take many years in a well-coordinated international response. The United States is dedicated to supporting efforts to help the people of Ukraine build and resume their lives.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.